welcome to the Fast Advice Podcast, where we talk everything agribusiness. This week on the podcast, I'm excited to welcome Emily Pullen from one of my favourite snack companies, Jim's Jerky. Find out how she has dealt with the pandemic and how she's grown the brand from the Warrego Highway and into the hands of consumers across the globe. Let's get into it. G'day, Emily. Excellent to have you on the Farm Advice Podcast today. How's everything going in sunny Queensland?
Not too bad. Promise of rain coming the next week, which I think everyone would be happy about. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think everyone's talking about the La Nina coming around.
Correct, yes. So hopefully that brings some relief for everyone, including those who are still waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all need a bit to keep us going, a bit more consistency. So before we get down to business, can you just tell us a bit about your story and how it led you to Jim's Jerky?
Yes, certainly. So I studied agronomy at university. So I felt very sure that I was going to be an agronomist. And then I did it for a couple of years and realised that I didn't enjoy it that much. It was just wasn't challenging. So I did a little bit of travel. I worked overseas for a number of years in London in the food sort of area. And in that meantime, my parents actually started Jim's Jerky. They were ex-graziers and went into the value-adding space. So when I came back from overseas and worked in Australia for a little while, we had that family conversation that families tend to have about whether or not I was going to come back into the business. And in 2015, I joined the family business formally.
Excellent. So like Jim's Jerky, Jim's your dad?
He is, yes. So mum and dad started it in 2004 in a little butcher shop outside of Toowoomba.
And it's really like grown out to quite a large jerky business. You can find it nearly most servos I've been in on the East Coast.
Yeah, we're working on it. It's still a small business. So jerky, while it's certainly gaining more and more popularity around Australia, is still a fairly niche product, but certainly it's got much more market acceptance now than it ever has before. And service stations, petrol, convenience, supermarkets, they're all starting to look more into that alternative snacking space.
Yeah, and it's a great protein to have on the run, and it's not like just having fatty chips or whatnot.
Exactly, yeah, well that's what we say anyway.
How did your parents come about, or like what spurred them on to start Jim's Jerky?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. They had a property on the Northern Downs at a place called Geelong, and then they also had a property in central Queensland. When they sold that, they were kind of looking around what they would do next, and Dad had a look at this little butcher shop outside of Toowoomba. It was actually being run by a South African guy who was making biltong as well as doing wholesale butchery. And Dad had never tried biltong before. It was something that he just thought was fantastic. It was, you know, minimally processed. It tasted like real meat, but like a really, you know, savoury snack. And it was so different from the jerkies that were available 16 years ago on the market. They tended to be really highly processed, really sugary, and a really long way away from the raw material that he had been producing as a grazier. You know, so much effort went into making this amazing beef product, and then the snack that was available in the store was, you know, a long way away from that. So he decided, completely randomly, to purchase the butcher shop, and instead of sort of continuing the wholesale butchering, start making beef jerky and biltong, because he really liked it and he thought that there was something like that on the market that other people might like it too. So that's how they got their start.
Well, starting out in 2004 was quite early on in the piece, and like you've captured a lot of that market, you feel?
We've captured a little bit, and you know we're always trying to grow and do more. I think being early in on the piece probably meant that they had to do a lot of the early work in educating consumers around what, you know, the difference between maybe some of the market leaders and the, I guess, the new generation of jerkies that tended to be less highly processed, you know, have sort of less sugar and things like that. So there was, you know, a long time of going to, you know, the Echo and Sydney Royal and getting everyone to sample, because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I don't like jerky. And then when they try it, they're usually pleasantly surprised. So there's been, a lot, you know, 15 years of education to grow the market that they've been a part of.
Yeah, definitely. Well, like with the sampling, it's quite easy for you. You don't have to give away an arm and a leg. It's just literally giving a couple of sachets out and then capturing them.
Yeah, that's right. Or, you know, particularly at the big shows, which unfortunately COVID's put paid to this year, you know, that's actually talking to consumers. So it's explaining the process, you know, explaining the cut of meat that we use, explaining the drying process, that it's dehydrated, it's not cooked. You know, so it's almost that one-on-one connection with consumers, which has helped us to organically grow over the years the way that we have.
And telling that story, I imagine, goes really well in the events. Are you, like, at the ECHA?
So we did all of the major shows around Australia, as well as the big agricultural shows. So we'd have stands there. And so that has been something that's been a big change for us this year with COVID happening and nearly all of those being cancelled this year, has been, you know, a different way that we've been able to work, you know, connect with those consumers. So, you know, a little bit more online, working a little bit more with distributors to get it out there. But that's been a challenge for us, certainly.
How has it impacted your, like, core functions much, or?
Not the core functions. What it's done is it's taken away one of our routes to market. So one of the things when I came back into the business 5 years ago was we had a look at the routes to markets that we had in place. So where are we selling? Where can we see the to be really good growth? So, you know, direct to consumer, whether that be we've got a store here, we've got our online store, and then we had our shows and markets. And then, you know, through retailers, so like you said, service stations, and then targeting the supermarkets as well. So it's taken away one of those routes to market. And I think one thing that it's proven to us this year was if you have all of your eggs in one basket, it can be really detrimental. And luckily, we've worked really hard over the last 5 years to have lots of different legs, so it didn't knock us out completely. But it certainly took out one of those routes to market for us, and a valuable one, because we love talking to our customers, and you get, you know, great feedback straight away around what people like, you know, what they like to have, what they enjoy. So we're missing that element of it, but we were still able to trade even having lost that.
Yeah, suppose like that feedback, you would rely on that quite a lot, wouldn't you, for your customers?
Different flavors, you know, the sort of size packs that people want to purchase, you know, whether or not they're enjoying the product. If we're trying a new flavor or a new product type, we might, you know, bring it out with samples and say, you know, get feedback, and if it sells out, it's gone really well. Or if, you know, people are not really keen, and, you know, well, that's not going to work for a wider release. So, and, you know, for a consumer-facing brand or any brand, you know, you ignore your customer to your peril. So having that connection has been really important, and you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, we can re-establish those much wider connections as we move forward in a post-COVID world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, hopefully for you it's not too long out before it's sort of back to normal for you and get back to the testing. For like your supply chain into Jim's Jerky, is that like, do you still have a farm with cattle on it, or?
So after Mum and Dad started, they did have a little farm that had, you know, ran a few head. But we work with some really trusted partners that are both wholesalers and processors to get access. We only use one or two cuts of beef in our processing, so we're really quite locked down in our specifications to make our product. So we work with some suppliers, and we use Topside mainly to process our beef jerky. So we'd have to run a hell of a lot of head just to harvest the Topside. So we use other trusted brands.
Do you think like Topside is something that would be of value more than Jim's Jerky? If they're selling Topside just through the markets generally into supermarkets, is jerky being able to like value add on that?
Yeah, I think certainly we've noticed in the last 10 years in particular the base value of Topside has really grown. I think further processing has absolutely played a role in that, and we certainly don't use enough to say it's definitely, you know, all us, but I think it's a fantastic processing meat, and it's a very, you can use it for a lot of different processes. So whilst it might not eat particularly well as a steak, it makes an excellent stir fry and other sort of ingredients. So I think as the value chain, the red meat industry has tried to grow the value overall of the cuts, top sides risen with that. It certainly has been times in the last couple of years where it's been scarce. So we've had to sort of like, you know, work to try and find the supply. So, you know, I think overall that's really a fantastic job by industry, though sometimes I wish they weren't so good at selling it so we can always have good access. That's right.
Is the top side the same as silver side?
Oh, similar. It's a similar cut. And honestly, you're probably better off talking to someone who knows their cuts way better than I do. But for us, we don't like a lot of marbling. Fat doesn't dehydrate. So we want it to be lean meat and no intramuscular fat or muscle where we can. So it probably doesn't eat that well as a steak, but it certainly dries really well for the product that we use.
A few mates and I used to do a bit of jerky on the side at university. We used to use the silver side.
Yeah, very similar cut and a nice size to work with.
Absolutely. So for like the farmers that you're getting your top side from, do they know it's going to Jim's Jerky and they like have a bit of accountability to that and enjoy that their product is good?
So it's probably not, to be honest. We tend to work with processors. So they'll take the carcass and utilize the cuts in different ways. Though over the years we have partnered with different branded products. One of the challenges with working specifically with a producer or a branded product is consistent product and you know, between the one and two pallets a week. So that's why we have a wide sort of group or network that we work with to make sure that we've always got access to the product so that we can get the raws in to then turn it into jerky to meet our requirements with our customers.
Exactly. So for like Jim's, are you looking at diversifying product? Like even different
always meats? Yeah, so we also, as well as beef, we do kangaroo. So we make a kangaroo jerky, which is actually doing quite well. We don't put a lot of effort into the marketing of it at this point, but it has a nice sort of turnover, which people are seeking those alternative proteins all the time. But you know, one of the things that we're always working on is new product development and having a plan in place for trialing new products, and that can be as simple as trying new flavors, right to actually developing new products. One of the things that we are constantly trying to look at is how we use our trim, because when we receive our top sides, if you can imagine, you know, a product this size, we trim it of all of the visible fat from the outside, because as I said, fat doesn't dry. So we're left with this kind of probably 80 cl trim product. That's a secondary from our beef jerky. So we make some beef ambient small goods out of that, things like dry horse, which is also a Southern African product, cheese grillers, twiggy sticks, beer sticks that we also find markets for, because it allows us to use all of the meat in an effective way. So that's something that we're constantly doing.
Yeah, so you're always needing to innovate and just like go into what the consumer wants in the end.
Yeah, that's right. Innovate, and also I think it's important for our customers that that we are constantly trying to offer them new products, be an innovator for them in terms of beef snacks and protein snacks. So, you know, you've got your core range that sells really well, but I think one of the rules in fast-moving consumer goods, 10% of your turnover from a new product, and whether that's a new flavour or a totally new product, that's something that, you know, the big companies like the Unilevers and the Mars of the world measure themselves by. So even though we're just a tiny little business on the Darling Downs, that's something that we try and think about too. Like every year, are we going to introduce something new to market to keep things innovative and keep customers interested?
How have you like tackled that coming up against the bigger players in the market?
Yeah, so I guess something we learned early on, you know, there's some really big, well-established jerky brands in the market. Yeah. And in terms of volume and price, we're never going to be able to meet them head on, because, you know, we're, as I said, we're a small family business. So we have to find our differentiation in the marketplace and try and match that with what a certain consumer is looking for. For us, how we've differentiated ourselves from some of the market leaders is the product itself is a little bit different. We're a little bit drier. We have a lower sugar content. We very heavily brand Australian because we're really proud of our Australian beef that we use and our, you know, our grazing roots, my parents' grazing roots. And I guess just giving people a different option. So, you know, I studied agronomy and my parents were graziers for 25 years. So we don't, you know, we've come into this industry having to learn so much. And one of the things we've learnt is that often in retail, you have a different offering for a different consumer. So you've got good, better, best. And so we have tried to take the premium position in that, that we're not necessarily the cheapest, but we give our value proposition is that, you know, we're a slightly different premium product.
Yeah, and you're sort of giving back to the community, the farmers, the processors.
Well, one of the joys of communicating by the internet, sorry, I just missed that.
And you're just sort of like giving back through your supply chain, back to the farmers and the processors that are processing your meat.
That's right. So, you know, one of the key things that we really see that we're doing is a new way for people to enjoy red meat. It's an out-of-home experience. It's in the impulse section. So often if you wanted to enjoy a piece of meat, you'd have to keep it cold and then you'd have to cook it and prepare it, whereas this is, you know, if you think about a potato and a bag of potato chips being totally different uses, well, we're doing that for beef. So we're looking at finding a new consumer occasion and hopefully one that can continue to grow over time.
Are you looking into, like, overseas? I imagine like the Asia markets would love kangaroo being lean and it's Aussie.
Yeah, that's right. So yes, we worked very hard and got our export accreditation at the end of 2019. So that was a big undertaking because it's, you know, it's a step up in terms of audits and some of the processes that we had in place. So we're all gung-ho to make 2020 our export year. And we all know what happened in March. So we definitely have our eye on the export market. We would, you know, we'd look at targeting specific markets and working with partners there to be able to offer Australian red meat as a snack. You know, the Australian red meat industry has done a fantastic job making Australian red meat the you know, the protein of choice in a lot of destination markets, and we'd like to be able to capitalize on that but in the snacking space. So that's been, I guess, watch this space, but a bit of an undertaking too because it's new for us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a mammoth job to be able to export your own product. Talking about like the industry, have you been working with the industry much at all, like with MLA red meat?
Yeah, yes, actually. So we have worked a bit with MLA. You know, last year they, well, the red meat industry released the plan for the next 10 years, and that was to, I think, double the value of the Australian red meat industry, which is a pretty big undertaking. And part of that is, you know, value adding to the product and thinking about value adding beyond just, you know, putting fresh meat on styrofoam. But, you know, thinking about all the different ways that you can create value. So we've done a couple of projects with MLA. One was looking at what export markets we might target, and another is working on a new product development as well. So I think, you know, they're really supportive, and in the last 10 years we've seen them engage much more post farm gate to try and work on new ways for Australian beef to be sold. So they've been a really good touch point for us.
I think it's a great way to bounce off like the industry and get a bit of research happening behind you, get a bit of backing.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess, you know, even though we are further down the production line, we still very much think of ourselves as part of the Australian red meat industry. So it's nice to sort of have that connection.
Yeah, and you're the connection to the consumer directly, the jerky lovers.
Yeah, that's right.
For like your marketing presence, what do you find which channels work, and like what digital assets are you using that others may not know of? Or
We're probably a little bit underdeveloped in some of our digital markets, and that's something that we've identified that we need to work on. I think how mum and dad, you know, the graziers from regional Queensland who started this, you know, going head to head with some of the big snacking brands, and you know, we think of ourselves now as a snack company, not just as a big jerky company, because we're in the same space as Smith's Chips, you know. So we probably need to develop that a little bit more. So the first phase of Jim's becoming a brand was that one-to-one consumer contact. So going to shows in, you know, Cairns and near Mackay and Brisbane, and going to the Gunnedah agricultural field days and things, you know, you're one-on-one, you're talking, people are starting to enjoy it. The next step beyond that is how you connect with people where you're not actually able to see them face-to-face to take that next phase. And so part of that is partnering with, you know, retailers so that you've got your brand presence. But I think most importantly is that the packaging is something that people want to pick up, because, they, you know, you've got less than a second, I think, when people are scanning supermarket aisles to actually make that impact. And then once they've purchased it, the repurchase is really important. Did they enjoy it? Is it something that they want to do again? And then hopefully that becomes a growth strategy in itself. So there's a little bit more to it, but it's something that we've identified that we, you know, for the next phase of growth, we have to lean into it.
Yeah, so you are measuring that bit of like the retention of the customers?
Yeah, so where we have sort of direct control, yes, and then we just have to work with our retail partners to say, you know, what's working, what's not. This is working really well, like this flavour is working really well, this flavour is not, so can we try another one? So it's just a constant conversation around delivering value for the customer that ends up eating the product, but also delivering value for your retailing partners, the guys that are taking on your product into their stores and selling it, whether that's a, you know, a small corner store or even one of the majors like Woolworths.
When you're looking for these stores, are you looking for like high traffic, high foot traffic, or high cars coming through, like service stations?
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. We would like to think that the place for jerky everywhere that there's a place for snacks.
Yep.
So, you know, we've got some random places that work really well, like a cinema. There's a couple of cinemas that just sell a really reasonable amount of jerky that you just wouldn't think. So anywhere that people snack, people that are starting to think more about what they eat. So if you're about to step into a car for a four-hour journey and you feel a bit snackish, like you want something, the pause now, do I buy the packet of chips and lollies, or do I buy an alternative snack? And an alternative snack is what we would say is a better for you snack or a permissible snack. So there's the popcorn, nuts, pretzels, beef jerky. These are, I'm still snacking and I'm still getting that satiation, but I'm thinking a little bit more about what I'm putting into my body.
Yeah, I think it's like a good way, you can tell your story like a lot better through that way, being a healthy alternative, yep, getting protein throughout the day.
Yes, that's right.
For what's coming up for Jim's Jerky? What's the next biggest project? The export market.
What's the next biggest project? Yeah, so exports, so we're sort of working with a couple of key contacts in some Southeast Asian markets. Those tend to be long conversations where you kind of need to do a fair bit of market research to make sure that the product that we have is one that's going to resonate with consumers there.
Yep.
So that's probably a bit more of a long-term goal. Otherwise, it's just continuing to develop our domestic markets and, I guess, grow into the markets that we already have and try and capture some new ones. As I said, working on some new products so that we've got something new to bring to market to keep consumers excited and to, you know, give something of value to our retailers as well. So it's just, I guess, a continuous sort of process to work through that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you've definitely got your work cut out for you during COVID and after COVID's relaxed a little bit.
Yeah, quite.
For like someone looking to value add to their own processes, what's like one piece of advice you'd tell them just to get stuck into it and do the research?
I think, yeah, so the way mum and dad started it is probably not one that you'd recommend, which is, I think this is really nice, I'm going to now sell this. Dad tells the story. We're on the for anyone in Queensland or who knows this area, where we actually manufacture and where our jerky cellar door is right on the Warrego Highway, which is quite a busy road that runs all the way west from Brisbane. And the first month that Dad took over the butcher shop and made his jerky, he made 12 kilos in that first month, I think. And he said he remembers standing at the front door watching the cars drive up and down the Warrego Highway. He's like, bloody hell, how am I going to sell this now? So I think you have to be a little bit mad to do it, but probably just do a little bit of research around what market you are looking to target. Is there, is there a need that you can fill? Has the consumer got a problem that you have the answer for? What does that look like? And I guess just do your homework on the costings and all of that. It'll be really boring planning stuff.
Yeah.
But mostly when you do it with some passion, and that can also be the differentiator between you and, a really big market leader. If you might be able to be a disruptor in that space.
Yeah, that's it. Just definitely be passionate, do the research and have a go.
Yeah, basically.
We might start to wrap it up there. For the podcast, is there anyone that you'd like to hear on here and why? Maybe keeping it within your own realm?
Yeah, I was having a bit of a think about that. And I actually think someone who I know who's had a really interesting experience this year and a definite change landscape, I think, is my a good friend of mine called Susan McEwen. And she's a meat trader, a meat salesman. She's actually based in Melbourne and works for Thomas Foods International. And their way of working has, all of us have been affected in one way or another, but I think in particular her experience with, there was a huge demand in the beginning and then the food service dying off and then, even some of the pressure on their processing plants, particularly in Victoria, it's certainly been a bit of a roller coaster. So I think she'd be a really interesting, addition to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. The meat trading business is huge. And I think we're going through a big shift. People looking for proteins, but also the alternatives such as beef jerky and also kangaroo.
Yeah.
For yourself or Jim's Jerky, how can people get in touch with you or reach you?
So our website is, if you Google Jim's Jerky, it should pop up. And we're on Facebook and Instagram as well. And personally, I have a little Instagram page called Beef Snack Enthusiast. And I share some of the behind the scenes stuff of what it's like to run a little beef jerky company. So that's
we're following along on there. That's excellent. Good to see the backside of it.
The away from the shiny outside.
That's it. Well, excellent to have you on the show today, Emily. Thank you for joining us.
That's all right. And I apologise for the lively sounds of the open plan office here.
No worries. It's all business.
No worries. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for joining us for the 21st episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Emily is leading a small snack brand against the biggest snack companies in the world, and she's pulling it off as well. Please help us and share and subscribe to the podcast so we can continue to give a voice to agribusinesses to create a more transparent industry. And also grab some jerky when you're in the servo next. Catch the episode in the show notes at farmsadvice.com.au and tune in next week. Cheers.